Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Tracy Collins from Cincinnati, Ohio, home of the Western and Southern Open, and from the tennis club that is home of rising WTA star Katie McNally. And you're listening to the best tennis podcast, The Tennis Podcast.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast and Cobra Kai Appreciation Podcast. I say that to placate the many droves of people that have contacted me over the course of the past week to inform me that I simply must be watching Cobra Kai, and how dare I even deign to consider not watching Cobra Kai. Several people were, quote, moved to contact the podcast for the first time to let me know. To let me know that I've been making the wrong television choices in my life up to this point. So we'll be rectifying that. I've put it on my list officially, and I will be watching Cobra Kai at some point in the future.
So it's only on a list then? You haven't actually bothered?
It's on a list. I've had a busy week, David. It's on the list.
Right.
It's on the list. Thank you to Tracy Collins that you heard there in our intro. More of Katie McNally later, Tracy, because she's one of the many people this week that has done a thing, Matt.
Yeah, she sure is.
What's she done?
David's read the agenda. She's won a doubles title with Coco Gauff.
Oh.
Coco Gauff. I mean, this wasn't supposed to come till this was a couple of agenda points down the list, but Coco Gauff has become the youngest player since Maria Sharapova in 2004 to do a singles doubles double. And that is for me the most unexpected stat of the week, because I was fully expecting 17-year-old Coco Gauff to A, be the youngest player ever to do that, and B, I definitely wasn't expecting the youngest to be Maria Sharapova, albeit in 2004, but you know, when did Maria Sharapova ever play doubles?
Was that the peak of her doubles career? I have a feeling it was. I don't think she did anything.
I think it might have
that.
Been it.
Mm.
I think it might have been one title and done. But anyway, yes, it was Katie McNally was partnering Coco Gauff en route to her doubles title in Parma. So that's the thing that she's done. But it's been a busy week in tennis. Many people have done many things. How have we enjoyed the week in tennis, Matt?
Yeah, it's been decent. It's been bitty. Lots of tournaments here and there, I think elevated by some big names playing them and sort of trying to hone their preparation for Roland Garros, some more successfully than others, which has been interesting to follow. And I think the title winners we've got are all quite interesting. I think one of them is a big contender at Roland Garros in Tsitsipas, who's won a title this week. And the others, I would all say, could be dangerous, would expect to have a deep run. So I think it's interesting from, you know, looking ahead to Roland Garros, as inevitably I find myself doing in weeks like this, ahead of a slam.
All the other titlists are in the players nobody wants to meet.
Exactly.
Category. Mm. Definitely an interesting week in tennis. It's Suzanne Longlin's birthday today, by the way. Which is my way of saying, if you haven't listened to the Suzanne Longlin podcast, the first of our two French Open relived episodes for this year's French Open, do listen to it. We encourage that. We put a lot into it, particularly Matt. And we've had a great response to it from those that have listened. And I feel quite confident that if you have an hour and a half to spare, you won't regret the hour and a half spent on learning about the quite wonderful Suzanne Longlin and her love of sparkle.
Mm. It very much makes me look forward to watching the documentary that I believe is planned for the future, which is executive produced, I think, by Martina Navratilova. I think that focuses on the match of the century between Longlin and Helen Wills. Mm. And so I'm not exactly sure when that's coming out, but I remember reading about that shortly after. I mean, we actually had decided we were going to do a Longlin Roland Garros relived podcast before we read about that, I believe. And
no one will believe that. Well, now,
I'm,
David.
You know, I'm don't call me a liar, people. All right, I don't. I speak the truth, as Superman once said. I never lie, Lois.
Oh my.
I never lie. Anyway. There's another little tangent I wasn't expecting. But John Wertheim, I think, as well, is helping to script and research that documentary. So, yeah, I believe they've got some footage that has never been seen for it. So that's the only thing what I loved about it was going off the back of recording that show and reading all of Matt's research was actually then looking up all the photography that is out there for us to try to promote that show and seeing these images. There is actually a lot out there that I didn't realize. And it's, you just
somebody,
lose yourself.
I'm sorry that I can't remember who it was, but somebody tweeted us a link to some restored footage of her that I hadn't seen before. And that was a joy to watch. So there are snippets out there. Mm. But alas, not as much as we would like.
Fans of Engelmann, who we quoted a lot on the Longlin podcast, should know that this documentary that's coming out is titled The Goddess and the American Girl, which is what his book is called. So I imagine that book is probably forming a lot of the basis for the research and the shaping of that documentary as well. So it should be great. And I think they're going to put some of that footage in colour, aren't they, as well?
Yes.
I love it. Love it when they do that. Right then, busy week, so we will get into it. Oh, actually, one thing. Due to an admin error this week, Rosie is our unexpected mascot. You already know plenty about Rosie. I'll tell you more at the end of the show. She needed a boost. She's been an excellent big sister this week, and a clerical error is given the opportunity to bask in some golden glow. So hello, Rosie. Right then, into tennis news. Should we start with Roger Federer's return to, well, not just clay, but return to tennis? It feels quite a long time ago now that this happened, because it was one and done for Roger Federer. He lost on Tuesday in his first match of the Geneva Open in three sets to Pablo Andujar. Probably the best thing about this match was that Matt and I got to watch it in person together in the sunshine. Brackets on a very, very small device on which we could barely see the ball. But watch it we did, Matt. It was glorious, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was a real, real boost to my spirits to be able to have that day with you on Tuesday. And watching Federer was a bonus. I made my return to tennis on the same day as Federer, and and we both lost.
The backhand is still there, folks.
And nothing else.
Not true. There were very strong reviews. Strong reviews for Matt's albeit rusty tennis, but the skills are very much there. So, Roger Federer, what did we think? Where's he at? I mean, we'd love to have more information on which to make an assessment of where he's at. I mean, we know this spell on clay isn't about winning the French Open, don't we? It's about playing some tennis, getting his eye in, maybe having what could be a farewell trip to Roland Garros, who knows. So it's not like, oh my gosh, he's not got the preparation he needs for a tilt at the French Open title. and yet still it's not ideal for him to have lost his first match against Pablo Andujar.
He even said that, didn't he, afterwards? He even said, look, this is all about Wimbledon for me, getting ready, and this is part of the preparation for that and getting my eye in. I can't tell you anything about how the match went because I was in a day full of meetings. So over to you, folks.
I felt he was fine. From what I saw, I thought he was moving pretty well, and his fitness certainly seemed to be better than what it was in Doha. Now, he lost the last four games of the match. He put himself in a winning position and then really blew it at the end. And I think he was disappointed with himself for letting it slip. But it didn't feel like he lost it because of fitness reasons. His game just sort of suddenly deserted him a little bit.
He had a sort of reverse surge, didn't he?
Mm.
An anti-Osaka.
Yes. And Duhar made some great returns, and suddenly the match was over. I think probably just lacking a little bit of match sharpness. I think he was a little unsure how he wanted to play. In that first set, he was standing up, chipping the returns. And then in the second and third sets, he was, you know, standing way back behind the baseline to return, sort of Nadal style. And I think that worked better for him, but there was just a little bit of uncertainty, perhaps. But the way I view it is that Federer's best grass court seasons, with the exception of 2017, have come off the back of clay. I really do think playing on clay helps his tennis on the grass. He's spoken about that. Gets him the rhythm on his ground strokes in particular. So I think as much as we might like to view this little period on clay as completely pressure-free for Federer, I think there is some pressure on him now at Roland Garros to win some matches, to get him ready for the grass. I think if he'd had a run in Geneva, he could have been completely uninhibited at Roland Garros and just gone there, swung away, doesn't really matter what happens. I think what the early loss in Geneva does is means that in order to prepare best for Wimbledon, he probably needs a couple of wins at least at Roland Garros. So it just slightly puts the pressure on next week for him to get those. Based on his tennis, I think he probably will. I think there were lots of positive signs, but, you know, he needs wins, he needs confidence, he needs some level, because Wimbledon is extremely close and Federer has barely played any tennis. And if he's going to compete there, I think he needs a little bit more than what he's got at the moment.
I'd also think he needs physically to just get used to match play again, because you become hardened to it, don't you, when you're playing these matches. And if you get early round losses, I mean, you can play your way into a Grand Slam. We've seen him win a Grand Slam. But he still, if you think even back to the Australian Open, he still required a couple of quite hard-fought first couple of matches before he suddenly hit his stride. And yeah, I agree with you. I think he'll be looking to try to just get some sets under the belt, really, at the French Open. And there are certain players that probably will fit him. I must admit, when he drew Pablo Andujar, I thought that's a good draw, really, for Federer. Andujar hasn't won a lot of matches this year, but, you know, he didn't get over the line. So it can become quite bitty when you're trying to get back into it.
Mm. I've just realised, courtesy of Matt, that I've been pronouncing Andujar's name wrong for the entirety of his career, which is a very long time. So it's Andujar, not Andujar, Matt. That's how you were saying it, and you're a Spanish speaker, so I can only assume.
I think it's Andujar.
Mm.
There's no accent on the A.
I don't believe so.
Therefore, it would be Andujar.
Right. David's making... Are you actually making a note of that, David?
I'm actually having a look on the ATP website immediately right, to find out whether he's done one of those recordings.
So Federer goes out of Geneva in the first round to Andujar.
He's didn't done go one. On and win. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Pablo Andujar.
I feel like I've made a very uncomfortable bed for myself to lie in with picking up on that. But yes... Now we know where we are.
Can't say it still, but...
So Federer goes out in his first match to Pablo Andujar. No?
Andujar.
Yeah.
Who does not go on to win the title because Casper Ruud, the most sort of bankable, consistent man in men's tennis at the moment, did win the title, of course. He beat Denis Shapovalov in the final 7-6, 6-4. Shapovalov, incidentally, after that final, announced that he's out of Roland Garros. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, Casper Ruud, who brought home my first bacon for a very long time in the annual predictions competition. And honestly, I went for Casper Ruud. He was the favourite for the title, so it didn't bring home much bacon. But I just wanted a banker, and there was never really a moment in the week that I doubted him, because this is what Casper Ruud does now. He shows up, doesn't he? Mm. Shows up and does the business. And David, I know you watched quite a bit of the final against Denis Shapovalov. In fact, I know that you came into that final after the first set and saw that it was won by Casper Ruud on the tiebreak, and your action was, looks about right.
Yeah, that's pretty much what
talk me through that.
That's what I would have expected based on the two players that I know them to be thus far in their career. As you say, Casper Ruud turns up, clocks in, plays, and if you're too good for him, he will lose.
Mm.
And it was up to Shapovalov to string together an incredible series of winners, because he is a dice roller, isn't he? He's a casino tennis player, and it's glorious to watch. And actually, fair play, he got to the final, so good week for him. But how often are you going to be able to produce that against a guy like him, who you've just got to keep hitting winner after winner against on clay? And yeah, I thought that sounds to me, I didn't watch the first set, it sounds to me like he's played well, he's pushed him, and he hasn't quite hit enough winners. And then second set I did watch, and Ruud was just too strong for him. It was drama free, really.
And then we have this slightly bizarre and very unexpected statement from Shapovalov quite a long time after the match, saying that, you know, with a very heavy heart, he's not going to be able to play Roland Garros. He says it's because of the shoulder injury that's been niggling at him for a long time, and he says he needs rest, but he also says that the medical tests are fine. So it's difficult to know where he's at, whether it's just a kind of, oh, it doesn't feel quite right and I just want to rest it, or whether there's a specific injury. I really don't know what to make of Denis Shapovalov's withdrawal from Roland Garros, whether this is a niggle that's got in his head. I don't know, but I certainly wasn't expecting that.
I would have thought it must be sufficiently acute, because he's been playing most weeks, hasn't he? It's not like he's let us know
he's played a lot, hasn't he?
It's not like he's had a problem that has stopped him playing. So something acute, I think, must have happened, or at least flared up from whatever his ongoing problem had been. But I think Matt made the point that maybe what he means medical tests are fine is that it's not something that is going to derail him long term.
Right. Thank you for being my Shapovalov interpreter.
That was my only interpretation of it. And I really hope it isn't something long term. As you said, he has been playing with it for quite a while, it seems. But I agree with David. Something presumably has happened for him to pull out a week ahead of Roland Garros, where you would think you would try to do everything to be ready for a Grand Slam. You'd think it'd be more likely he would have pulled out of Geneva last minute. So it suggests maybe something has happened. He's tweaked it more or something. I don't know, but I hope he's all right.
Gives him time to focus on Midnight Life, his new music, dropping. I think it might have dropped. We just might have missed the drop. I believe there's three new tracks. Parental advisory, explicit content for anybody heading to check out Midnight Life. It is out now. Sorry, it is out now. Chapeau, Midnight Life. Very sort of pensive, black and white, arty photo of him on the sleeve.
Catherine, I've got an injury at the moment that hurts when I laugh. So
we're not meant to make David laugh.
No. So we are not sponsored by Denis Shapovalov's music career, I should say. I don't know why I'm giving him so much promo. But there it is. Before we move on from Geneva to the many other tournaments that we had taking place last week, one other bit of business from there is that we obviously had pre-tournament press with Roger Federer, first opportunity for the press to speak to him in quite some time because he's not played since Doha. And he was quizzed by Ben Rothenberg, who obviously did the story with Olya Sharipova, who has obviously accused Alexander Zverev of domestic abuse. He did that story with her in Racquet magazine. He quizzed Roger Federer about Teammate, his management company in which he's a part owner, ceasing to work with Zverev at the start of this year. And these are the things that Roger Federer had to say about what happened there and what his thoughts on it all are. He said, "These are decisions that Tony takes and the team. Look, Sasha is a great guy. I'm really happy for him when he does well, but I don't get involved in those types of decisions, to be honest. I feel like if I get asked, I get asked. But otherwise, for me, this is something that's in the past now. And I think for Sasha, it's important to have his team and be comfortable with his team." And then he sort of goes on to just sort of distance himself from the decision. He says, "I think that's what I've heard is that Sasha also wanted, there was an urge for him to have a fresh start. And I think for Tony and the team as well, I'm not sure, but I'm happy when Sasha does well. And all of the allegations, that's super private stuff that I don't want to comment on." And then he's asked a follow-up about whether the ATP should do anything to try and investigate or have a policy about domestic violence, as lots of other major sporting leagues do. And he queried that. He said, "Other leagues do?" And Ben responded, "Yes, yeah, certainly a lot of other big American leagues do." Federer replied, "We're independent contractors, I guess, so it's maybe more complicated than others. Oof, I don't know. I feel like this is something very personal." Goes into a bit further detail about that. And then he goes on to say, "I don't know that I want to talk about it, to be honest. I don't want to bring this subject up. I feel like I want Sasha to focus on his tennis. Who am I now, months later, to comment on it? I understand that, Ben, you want to write something about it, but you understand me too, that I don't feel super comfortable talking about it." I was hugely disappointed when I read those comments from Roger Federer. My heart really sank. I wasn't expecting him to say anything that really stood up for a viewpoint on it all, but I was expecting him to have better prepared an answer than that, to just sort of awkwardly say, "I'm not comfortable talking about it. Look, none of us are comfortable talking about this. We'd far rather be talking about something more joyful. This does not make us feel comfortable. Some things in life are uncomfortable." And the fact that he didn't say domestic abuse is wrong and horrible. I mean, that's the least controversial thing you could possibly say. I mean, you're not, I understand he's always somebody that's tiptoed around controversy. It is not controversial to say, "I condemn domestic abuse." It's so basic, and so few people are saying it when they're asked about this matter. And that is distressing.
And he could have said that while still acknowledging in the same answer what Alexander Zverev has said all along, that he denies the allegations. He could still have said exactly what you just said there, that he condemns any form of domestic violence or abuse. Now, I suspect that he would say, "Well, that goes without saying. Of course I condemn it." Now, and I'm sure he does. I'm sure that is how he, of course that's how he feels. But there is a value in saying it. And I think the biggest surprise to me is as you've said, that he sounded as though he was taken aback by the questions. And I'm trying to work out why that would be, because he hasn't been questioned about it before. A long time has gone past since those allegations were first raised, and really he should have had a very clear understanding of, if I get asked this, this is what I'm going to say. I wonder whether maybe he just thought, so much time has gone past, nobody will bother asking me now, and kind of put it to the back of his mind. But it did surprise me, that.
Yeah, same. I was really shocked by how caught off guard he was. I think this incident, what it's done is it's shone a light on the fact that tennis doesn't have a way of dealing with these allegations. And Federer's response there in that question, I think he probably is representative of how a lot of people in tennis feel. They're uncomfortable, they don't want to talk about it, they don't know how to talk about it, and therefore nothing gets done about it. If he'd given it some more thought and shown that he really cared about it by knowing what to say, I'm sure he would arrive at the right conclusion and the right thing to say. But the fact that he hadn't thought about it was just really disappointing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Not a highlight of the week, I think, for any of us reading those comments.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So, while Casper Ruud was winning the title in Geneva in Parma, we had a second career title for 17-year-old Coco Gauff, her first on clay. And, of course, she won the doubles as well with Katie McNally. And we've told you that she's the youngest to do that since Sharapova in 2004. She beat Chong Wong in the final 6-1, 6-3. She only lost one set all week. And she said, after the win, "I like the dirt now." And of course, she was junior Roland Garros champion way back in 2018. And I think for the rest of the tennis world, probably the biggest thing to come of the week is that she's now up to a career high ranking of 25 and will be seeded at a Grand Slam for the first time at Roland Garros. And I think every seeded player breathes a sigh of relief that Coco Gauff isn't hanging around unseeded anymore.
Yeah, it was really something, actually, watching Coco Gauff last week off the back of what has felt like a building process to this. Last year at times she looked a little bit rudderless, a little bit as though, oh, it was all going so well, and now I'm hitting all these double faults, and I'm not, you know, her body language was still good. I don't think there's any panic in her, but I think that it was a little jarring to see that it wasn't happening for her in a sort of straight line upwards almost, and I think that actually, if you think about it, it's rare that you get that straight line. You get these undulations. Suddenly this year, it's looked different this last 2 months. And she's had some results. She hasn't been winning everything she's played, but she's had some notable results or closely pushed somebody really, really good on clay. And she's just, I mean, she's 17 years of age. She looks bigger and stronger and more athletic every time you see her because she's growing and getting older and more mature. and as a tennis player too. I mean, I don't know. Where we end up with Coco Gauff is one of the great fascinations of the next 10 years, because watching her progress and actually not knowing, because to me the potential is off the scale high, and yet you don't know what might come in between all that along the way. And I love the storyline, and she's so watchable. I love her body language. I love her demeanor. I love how much she loves playing and loves the sport.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that seeding position now is really significant, as you said, for her. It will help her in those draws. For the rest of the field, those seeds avoid Gauff. But it's also what it represents, which is a significant jump at a time where it's difficult to make jumps. Anyone who is going from outside seeded positions to inside seeded positions at the moment is doing really, really well. And she's been building up to these last couple of weeks she's had all season. I was having a look. She's won 23 main draw matches in 2021, which is more than she won in 2019 and 2020 put together.
Wow. Yeah, that's how it feels, yeah. They often haven't been kind of headline-grabbing wins.
Exactly. They've been out of the spotlight, but she's just been putting in the work, getting the results. And as you said, her game is improved. She was so mature, so clinical all week, I thought. That forehand, which can occasionally look a little bit fallible on other surfaces, the way it loops, it seems to really work on the clay. And she's developed a drop shot. I watched her play Anisimova. She beat her in straight sets. And, you know, they're two promising young players. And yet Gauff had a tennis IQ that looked like it was above. She just knew when to hit the drop shots, knew how to get Anisimova moving around that court. And she was really, really impressive and great to watch. And I very much enjoyed in her victory speech where she said it was the first of many. And Jessica Pegula on Twitter pointed out, "You've already won one. Is it your second?"
Had she genuinely?
I don't know.
Did she mean on clay?
Maybe
perhaps?
She meant on clay. Maybe she meant with her. I don't know whether she's got some new people in her team or something. She was thanking them. But yeah, this is a second title.
Linz 2019 for a 17-year-old probably feels like, you know, a different lifetime.
It's also yes. BP before pandemic.
That's new, well, David.
Just thought of it. What can I say? Oh, by the way, the opponent she beat in the final, Wang Chung, who is coached by Pat Cash. I mean, she had had a terrible time results-wise so far this year. She had barely won a match. And I know Cash had been trying to work with her on different things, etc. And then suddenly she's had a run to the final. I don't think of her as a clay court player. I don't really know what her history is on the surface. But, yeah, I'm always just interested in a fork in the road, a moment where these players just suddenly it clicks and they start getting some form again, you know.
Speaking of rankings, I mentioned Jessica Pegula there. Very significant week for Gauff in terms of Olympic qualification. She's sitting in that fourth spot for the US now. And it would mean, I think, Pegula, Keys or Risk will likely need a run to the fourth round at Roland Garros to overtake her, because the Olympic cutoff is immediately after Roland Garros. So whatever your ranking is then, that's the one that's used for Olympic qualification. So she's put herself in a great spot to make the Olympic US team. I mean, amazing.
I like the race for Olympic spots. That excites me. Final bit on Palmer, which is the curse of David Law struck again.
God, yeah.
This week. Who did you curse this week,
well,
David?
Just to take you back, a week ago, riding high on the excitement of actually getting one right and getting loads of points for Sabalenka, I just went for this Hail Mary on Jennifer Brady to win in Rome, and she didn't even get on the court. She just got injured before her first round match and didn't play. So next week I go for Paola Badosa. No, it wasn't Paola Badosa. I'm looking at the wrong one.
If you had
gone for Paola Badosa, that would have gone well.
Yes, it would have done. Why didn't I do that? Anyway, I went for Sara Cerebes-Tormo, who was playing in Parma, thankfully. Got that bit right. And she played Sara Errani. And I tuned in for the first ball. And 2 hours, 10 minutes later, they were still in the second set. And I was still watching. And Cerebes-Tormo, what I didn't check, probably should have done, is that Cerebes-Tormo had a love four record against Errani, so that wasn't the most. But then she got one set all, and you know, and then at two games all, third set, Cerebes-Tormo also pulls out injured. So I'm sure it's worse for her being injured than me, although I'm also injured. Maybe there's a relation there. Anyway, but obviously I've now had two in a row where I've ended up pointless.
Mm. Sign up to the newsletter to find out who David will curse this week. The Jennifer Brady curse, incidentally, David, rather more severe than we even thought, because she's split up with her coach, Michael Gesserer.
All right.
Who?
That's a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big... I mean, look, her results recently haven't been great. I don't understand why she hasn't been playing better on clay and has never played better on clay. And I'm reluctant to sort of attribute all of her success to a coach, particularly a male coach. I just don't like that. Just makes me a bit uncomfortable to do that. But you can't deny the correlation between her total transformation of her career and her teaming up with Michael Gesser and spending that time training in Germany with him. I mean, those two things are inextricably linked. So I worry for a little. That does raise eyebrows for me.
I mean, it is only 2 months since she was in the Australian Open final, but I don't know why she split from him. I mean, I wonder whether there's a logistical element because of the locations. Mm. I don't know. But yeah, it will be interesting to watch where she goes from here. Because I also wonder how she will play with pressure in a way of people now aware of how good she is and can be. And, you know, whether she'll be able to continue it.
Mm. Just on Sara Errani, by the way, she's just trudged off my screen. She's playing in French Open qualies, former finalist in French Open qualies. She was about to win against Sasha Vickery, but they've been rained off. So they're obviously having the same deeply depressing May in Paris that we've been having in the UK. Summer appears to be not a thing at the moment, not imminently anyway. So fingers crossed the weather picks up a bit, because there's very much an October vibe about the French Open at the moment from what we can see on our screens. You mentioned Paula Badosa, David. So should we head to Belgrade? Because Paula Badosa won her first singles title there this week. She was up against Anna Konya in the final, and desperately sad to say, Konya had to retire in the second set of that with a right hip injury, which is a new one, I think, for Konya. She's had so many different injuries that have plagued her career. So I don't know whether it's better that it's not a recurrence of a previous injury or worse. I don't know. But it's nonetheless a great week for Paula Badosa, who's someone else that's just showing up, you know, clocking in. She's reached the semi-final of her last three events. She was a semi-finalist, of course, in Madrid, her home event, first Spanish woman ever to get that far. She's inside the top 40 now, but not seeded at Roland Garros. And I'd say she's near the top of the list, if not top, of players that seeds don't want to be drawn against there.
Yeah. She's good, isn't she? And I sense a self-belief that hasn't been there in the past, that some players just have some results or feel fitter and start to feel like they belong. And that's how she comes across to me now.
Yeah, I saw quite a lot of her in Madrid. She had one really big win there. She lost to Ash Barty quite handily in the semi-finals. But she wasn't the player I thought she was. She was a far bigger hitter.
Yeah, that's
than I realised.
Struck me as well. Because I mean, there are sort of physical stature similarities to Sharapova, which I'd never even thought of before. Just in terms of the way she's. I mean, aside from the hair and etc., but just the way she sort of crowds a court and tries to, she's trying to take you out with shots rather than just rally. I think Barty exposed some limitations, and that's hardly surprising. You'd have to be almost the perfect player not to be exposed in some way by Ash Barty. But yeah, it's just it's that self belief that strikes me.
It was Bencic, by the way, that she beat in Madrid. She beat Krejčíková, Savastova, Bencic. She of course beat Barty in Charleston before Barty got her revenge in Madrid. So she's just creeping up those rankings. And I'm going to be very interested to see who she draws in the first round in Paris. When is the French Open draw, Matt? Is it the Sunday start? It throws me.
I think it's Thursday evening.
Okay. Thursday evening for the draw. And then, of course, we'll have a French Open preview for you. And then we're into daily podcasts. And we've got one more French Open relived for you before then, when David's already smiling. We'll be heading back to 1991.
Yeah, I can do that one on my own. It's all right. You can have a day off.
Jim Courier time. So let's head to Lyon now, where we had a title for Stefanos Tsitsipas. He beat Cam Norrie in the final. Let's just go back before we deal with the final to Cam Norrie's win over Dominic Thiem, 6-3, 6-2. I mean, look, a great win for Cam Norrie. I'm going to repeat myself now, but he's somebody else that, look, his ceiling is lower than Casper Ruud's, I think, but he's somebody that's doing a Casper Ruud, in that there are going to be players with a level to beat him. Stefanos Tsitsipas was absolutely that player yesterday in the final. But he will produce his level. He will produce his ceiling, I think.
Yeah.
Particularly on clay at the moment. He just seems so hardened and match tough on the surface. And he's just showing up week in, week out. It's really admirable stuff from Cam Norrie.
Yeah, it's quite simple, really. You need to be a better player than Norrie, and you need to turn up. Because if you don't turn up, he will be there to take you out. And I also think that he is believing in himself more with all these wins that are coming, and not just regarding himself as a guy who has got onto the main tour and can play a couple of rounds. I mean, that two finals on good clay court tournaments with draws in Estoril and now Lyon. And yes, a surprise. I mean, you'll have to tell me about 6-3, 6-2 against Dominic Thiem. I didn't watch that match. But that is really alarming. I mean, well played Cam Norrie, right? But what is going on there? Dominic Thiem losing 6-3, 6-2 early on like that.
Yeah, so I saw most of this match. Cameron Norrie was everything you would expect him to be. And I really am conscious of trying not to do Cameron Norrie a disservice when we talk about him, because he's more than just a solid tennis player who pulls his weight. You know, he's top 50 in the world. He's a brilliant tennis player, and he consistently has wins against players ranked higher than him. In fact, his hardest fought win all week was against the French qualifier outside of the top 100. But having said all that, Dominic Thiem was really bad. The forehand was all over the place. And I'm a bit confused about Dominic Thiem. I picked him to win the title partly because we were going to get decent points for Thiem this week. And when are you going to get so many points for Dominic Thiem to win a clay court 250? I thought it's something to take advantage of.
You're awfully strategic about your predictions, Matt. I just look and go, Casper Ruud, he's quite good. Here we go.
I would say there's something to be said that I'm doing better than you, Catherine, but we're both at the bottom, so neither technique works.
That really hurts. Stop making me laugh.
Stop making David
Sorry.
Laugh.
Back on track, Dominic Thiem. What I think is that what's confusing is Thiem has identified the problem. He's spoken openly, and he's said how much he enjoyed the rest and how much he struggled to come to terms with the motivation after being a Grand Slam champion. And in my mind, I've read those quotes from Thiem, and I've thought, right, he's identified the problem, he's back on track, here we go, he's going to build up his form on clay, he's a French Open contender, of course he is. And that was all heightened by the decent form he showed in Madrid. But I suppose identifying the problem and solving the problem are not the same things. And it's good that he's self-aware and reflective and has talked about the situation he finds himself in. But it strikes me that he still hasn't figured it out. His tennis is not where he wants it to be. He isn't the player he wants to be at the moment. Just because he's recognised the reasons why doesn't mean he's solved them, I think is where I fall with Dominic Thiem. And he's still playing like he was at the start of the year. It's possible that it will come back during Roland Garros, but the way he was talking after that loss to Norrie, he said himself, this is a big step back. It suggests that perhaps not, perhaps he needs more time. His form is nowhere near where he needs it to be.
Yeah, Roland Garros might be what helps play him back in.
Could be.
If anything.
Well, he's actually relying on that
if,
now.
If he gets the draw that he needs to give him the time to play himself back in.
Tsitsipas feels like Dominic Thiem to me. You know, when I feel like the pecking order on clay, and even just generally at the top of the men's game, it feels like Tsitsipas has just replaced Thiem in terms of the position of threat to the biggest guys.
How good was Tsitsipas in the final yesterday?
He was really good. And he that was the classic Cameron Norrie just not being as good as the other guy. And the other guy totally on the ball. And Tsitsipas stepped up and dismissed him 6-3, 6-3. He didn't smash him, but he just fairly routinely took care of him. And I always look at Tsitsipas and think, God, he plays so much. Is there a point at which he's just got to reduce his workload a little bit? But he seems so fit and match tough and rarely seems, he never seems to look tired or anything like that. He looks just a cracking athlete, and I think he is right where he wants to be.
Well, he is taking this week off, David. He is not playing the Ultimate Tennis Showdown this week.
Bit of a diss, isn't it, to old Patrick Mouratoglou?
It is a bit of a diss. I mean, he's played an awful lot of tennis. Shall I tell you who is playing the Ultimate Tennis Showdown this week? Shall I tell you via their nicknames? And you can see if you can identify who the player is from the nickname.
Go on then.
Who might the tornado be? If you get this, then it's really good going. It's Corentin Moutet. I've no idea why he's called the tornado. Who might the hotshot be?
I mean, you know,
Pablo Cuevas.
About 35
it's,
people.
It's inexplicably Taylor Fritz. Who might El Tank be?
Bernard Tomic?
Christian Garin.
Different sort of tank, I think, David.
Who is it?
Christian Garin.
Oh. I thought that might have been Bernard Tomic doing gag.
I've got a gimme for you here. Grigor.
Well, thanks, Grigor, for helping us out.
In the story, in my mind, Grigor's refused to have a naff nickname, and I respect him for that. Who's El Peck?
Oh, that's Schwartzman. Peque.
And what is a Peque?
It means small in Spanish. But that's his nickname anyway.
The small.
He calls
Lovely.
Himself that.
Okay, here's one for you. The Bublik enemy.
Oh, God.
Do you see what they've done there? The chess master.
I have no thoughts.
Daniil Medvedev.
Right. Does the player think up this stuff? I think the is that
I don't know. And Fognar.
Fanini.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Which confuses me because I thought you're not supposed to pronounce the G in Fanini, but presumably in Fognar you do pronounce the G, otherwise it's Fognar, and that's not fun. Anyway, there we go. That's on this week. May 24th. Tsitsipas not playing. What else have we had happen this week? Whilst we were on Palmer, I forgot to mention Serena Williams' loss in her opening match to Katerina Siniakova. It did free her up to attend the Monaco Grand Prix yesterday and wave the checkered flag, showing off her guns. Great deltoid muscles, which is something I was complimented on whilst receiving my COVID vaccine yesterday.
You were chuffed, weren't you?
I was so chuffed, yeah. I'm sure the nurse says that to everyone
That's really cool that she got to wave the Chequered flag. I didn't know she got. I knew she was there, but that's really cool.
Yes, I think she thought it was as well. Daniil Medvedev was also at the Grand Prix. I mean, so many of them live in Monte Carlo,
what did he
don't
get
they?
To wave?
So they...
Good.
Nothing. He was dressed up as a sort of
chess master,
like old fashioned boy going to church. I thought.
Right.
What is one of them dressed like?
I don't know. He had like a sort of side parting. He looked very clean cut.
Wasn't he wearing all white?
Yeah.
Oh, was it corporate Medvedev? That's my least favourite Medvedev.
It was. It looked very corporate. Oh. I don't believe that's what he wears in his free time.
It's his least favourite Medvedev as well. Mm. But you know, if you want to keep the notes rolling in, you do a bit of that as well, I suppose. Yeah.
Full disclosure on Serena Williams, Matt and I were watching Federer, and in tennis shoots itself in the foot news, those two matches were on at the same time. So we weren't able to watch Serena Williams live. I think we've both read bits and bobs about that performance. Sort of similar to Federer, not alarming, but not where she needs to be, I think would be what I take from what I've read on it, Matt.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she won a match before that, didn't she? She beat a 17-year-old wild card, I think, Italian wild card. There was a nice moment afterwards where they had a photo together. So this was her second match in Parma.
Oh, that passed me by, Matt.
But still, I think your analysis stands up. what I read was that she lost 15 points in a row in the middle of the second set, and
wow.
16 of the
Another
last
anti-surge.
16 of the last 18 in the match. So it was similar again to Federer in that respect. I mean, Siniakova is dangerous. She can beat a lot of top players. She has done that. It's a trickier match than Federer's, I would say, against Andujar. I'm really nervous about saying that name now.
One of the issues they have here now, in terms of Serena Williams, I mean, Federer has his own, but I kind of feel like because it's best of five sets, and I think there are fewer really difficult draws in men's tennis right now for him than there are for the women. So normally I would think, well, Serena Williams is good enough to just play her way in. A day off every other match. She could draw so many players that are dangerous right now. And that it could she could just come unstuck immediately.
Mm. Agreed.
Would it be fair to say that... Hang on, no, I haven't thought this through properly. I think if Wimbledon were best of three for the men, Federer would be more likely to lose early, but also more likely to win the tournament.
Correct, yes, but I entirely agree with that.
Weirdly, but I think with Serena, if it were best of five, maybe that would help her in the latter stages, where we've seen her had some slow starts in finals and big matches recently. I don't know
what you're saying is both Federer and Serena need the ante what we've been proposing for the last several years, i.e. they need it to be best of five sets until the quarterfinals and then for it to go best of three sets and then the
Federer needs
for
that.
Federer, but I think Serena needs
what we've been proposing.
What we've been proposing.
Doesn't she need best of three all the way, five all
the way?
Or maybe
she needs best of five all the way. Maybe that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't think we can organise that in time, folks. So just, you know, and we're not biased
pointless
anyway.
Thought.
we got tournaments this week in Belgrade. Djokovic is the top seed there. Monfils is the second seed.
Oh, a shout out to Monfils. He won. He won a match.
Oh.
First time he's won since COVID.
Since COVID. Goodness me. Mm. Wow.
I'm trying to think who he beat. Sabot Wild?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe he's done some fun interview content. I haven't watched any of it, but Twitter has been alerting me to some fun content involving Gael Monfils.
Didn't he get a tennis ball in the privates from Roger Federer?
Right, okay.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah.
Okay.
It was Federer joining in with Gem's life.
Oh, third wheeling. Parma has a men's event this week. Sonego is the top seed there. Benoit Paire is the second seed, and the WTA is an event in Strasbourg where Bianca Andreescu is the top seed, Jessica Pegula the second seed, and there's no buys in that tournament. which is what we like to see. Just wanted to mention that Tanasi Kokkinakis won a challenger title this week in Biella, which seems to just be permanently hosting challenger events.
Was that Biella 8 or something?
Yeah, when was the last week when Biella wasn't hosting a challenger event?
It's great, isn't it?
And the challenger tour has just stationed itself in Biella, which is fine. Seems like a good idea. And he's now going into Roland Garros qualies, and I know we shouldn't be biased, but I hope he qualifies.
Yeah.
Because I just wish him well, and yeah, it's good to see him just clocking up wins and grinding it out and building hopefully some confidence in his tennis and in his body. Mm-hmm. So that's an uplifting story. The one big story that we haven't yet covered is that Indian Wells is confirmed to take place in 2021. It will be in October. The exact dates are still TBC, because they need to work around other calendar dates, the WTA finals, those sorts of things that the tours haven't yet set. So there's still some moving chess pieces, but it'll happen. And that's just great, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's just, and yeah, it, and it looks like they intend it to happen with crowds, with full prize money, which is massive at the moment. That's really massive. My prediction is that will feel like a Grand Slam, more so than Indian Wells ever has. I think the prize money thing is really big.
Well, I think the prize money thing is big. I suppose it depends what the rest of the tour looks like at that time. And I'm trying to figure out the dates as well, because we don't know what the rest of, whether the Asian swing will happen or in what way it will happen. And I'm also just curious about the movement of travel for players. They'll have the US Open. For some of the male players, there'll be the Laver Cup in the States, won't there? And what, I mean, do they just stay in the States and hang on for Indian Wells? You know, there are those elements. So it'll just be a great fascination. I mean, I'm not sure I share your optimism about quite how strong it will be in terms of the very top players, but we'll see.
This is an uncomfortable role reversal.
Isn't it just? Oh, okay. Where's your optimism at, Matt?
I'd better maintain some normality and be in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. It's great. I was delighted that Indian Wells is going to happen this year. That's, you know, the first event to be hit by COVID, and it's finally going to be coming back, I think.
Yeah.
I just think that alone
does feel
is
symbolic.
Great.
Kind of the first major sporting event to fall. Yeah, if only my bag was still packed. So that's it for your tennis news for this week. We'll be back, as I said, with our Roland Garros preview at the end of the week. We've got our next Tennis Relived on Thursday. Frankly, refresh your podcast app every day from now on, because, or certainly from Thursday on, because we just won't be able to stop podcasting. We'll have our mascots, each of us, throughout. They're with us through thick and thin. There's a lot of thin. Mine is Zeus, with thanks to Casper Ruud.
Mine's Rogan is eyeballing me very closely at the moment for some of my choices. But anyway, thanks Rogue generally.
And mine's Scousel Mousel. And we're having a tough patch at the moment, but back on track soon, hopefully.
Matt and Scousel Mousel, the strategic predictors. Billie Jean's sponsor is Billie Jean King, actual words I get to say every week. And she'll be furious to know that Rosie is our mascot for this week. Hello, Rosie.
Hi, Rosie.
Hey there, Rosie.
Rosie's Catherine's parents' dog and is just the most beautiful dog. And it's been a bit,
she's lovely.
Been a bit put out lately.
No, she's not. She's really embraced Billie Jean. She's
is
really
she?
Embraced her big sister role. Yeah.
I've seen a lot of cold shouldering going on.
It's lovely. No, it started off with a bit of cold shouldering because, you know, Billie Jean's a lot. But Billie Jean just didn't take no for an answer and forced Rosie to be friends with her. Matt, who are our shout-outs for this week?
They are for Elizabeth Germino.
All right, Elizabeth.
Oh. Hello, Elizabeth. The name of our queen.
Indeed.
Alan Chalmers.
Oh, Alan.
Oh, Alan Chalmers.
Alan owns the tennis bookshop.
And, he does.
And it's an amazing business he's got. Selling. I mean, why didn't we think of getting in touch with him about Suzanne Longland? Oh, well. thankfully, we had Matt. But anyway, Alan, thank you for your support.
Yeah, thanks for your support, Alan.
And finally, Paul Bullock.
All right, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Who emailed me to say, when he gets his shout out, please mention that he's a big Bruce Springsteen fan.
So, hello, Paul.
You can come again, Paul.
New Springsteen music apparently on the horizon.
Apparently.
Mm.
Mm. He buried that lead in an interview.
Yeah, yeah. We wait with bated breath. On that bombshell, I'll leave you. We'll be back on Thursday with Tennis Relived 1991. Just 3 days to wait, David. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Leave us an Apple Podcasts review. Do all the things that David usually remembers to tell you and I forget. And we'll speak to you on Thursday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.